Welcome back to the Smoking Snake podcast. This is episode 77, and it's a bittersweet episode here. I'm your host, Peter, joined as always by your other host, Enric. The episode where we get to bring you the last bit of action from the 2023 season. We have the champions, of course, Palmeiras, and we have the, we of course have the relegated teams, including Santos. If you heard that that rustling, dear listeners, that was me putting a paper bag on my head. Shameful relegation after 111 years of elite football in Serie A for Santos Futebol Clube. And it all came to a shocking end this Wednesday. But we'll get to all of that. Match week 37, match week 38, all of that great stuff. Our predictions, top scores, everything like that. But before we do that, let's just check in with Enric. Enric, how are you doing, buddy? Have you been able to get up out of bed? Are you okay? Talk to me. We can have a nice little trauma meeting here as the team of our heart, the team that we follow on a day-to-day basis, has gone down to the B for the first time.
Man, it's been tough, especially the last couple of days since that match. It's extremely tough waking up and realizing that what we witnessed Wednesday night was a reality and something that we never imagined. We never thought we would live a day to this. We became supporters not because Santos is a team that has been winning a lot in history. Basically, most of the trophies that they had won have been before we were even born. But still, it's the way that these players played which made us fall in love. And what we mostly wanted from those players to put on an effort and show what they can give us and perform in Brasileirão. And in the last 2 or 3 years, it's been completely different than what we expected. And we lived a day that we are in right now, and it's not a good situation. So hopefully we can come back in the future.
Yep, totally embarrassing, but we'll get to that. We'll go in depth on that both today and hopefully in some coming episodes with some great guests. But Enric, let's start at the beginning. Match week 37, the penultimate match week. And we had some great matches that really set the stage for the final day, which was an instant classic, I think, from a neutral perspective. But let's start at the top. Corinthians and Internacional squaring off, and Atletico Mineiro hosting Sao Paulo as well. Two games that didn't have a whole lot of sway in the final table and the results. Maybe four teams that didn't have a ton to play for. What'd you kind of think of these games, Inter and Atletico getting the wins there? And Atletico, again, they've been going for that second place. Their owners and coaches promised bonuses if they got that second place. So and they have the best record in the second half of the season, and the best player, Paulinho. What do you think of these two matches? Any comments on these?
Yeah, two matches that, as you said, were not really important in terms of what teams need to be doing. Corinthians continue to disappoint yet in another match at home, especially after losing 5-1 to Bahia 2 weeks ago. They lose again despite scoring against Internacional, and a name that we've been seeing in the score sheet recently, Angel Romero. He got, I believe, 2 goals in the match against Vasco da Gama, scores again here, but it's Mauricio and Vanderson who get the winner for Internacional. Surprising, I just realized a couple hours ago, Vanderson is actually a Belgium national team contender, so he can be playing for Belgium, and something I never realized until now. And yeah, it's a 2-1 win for Winter, and great match for them. They get the 3 points.
Yeah, I think he's like, if you remember the Manchester United Pereira brothers, I believe they both hold citizenship in Belgium. And I think all of their dads, including Vanderson, played professional football in Belgium and when they were born. And I think that's the reasoning there. And of course, Pereira, Andres Pereira, probably more well known in these circles for the blunder in Libertadores final versus Palmeiras. Where Daverson scored for Palmeiras, and we'll get to him in a second. But any more to say on Atletico and São Paulo, or all good there?
Yeah, Atletico, they get the 2-1 win just like Inter. They do it at home. The ha first half, maybe not the most entertaining, but the second one definitely had goals, especially after the 77th minute. You mentioned Paulinho, who got the minute of the goal in the very last minute of the match. But another man that has been balling for Galos has been Hulk. He gets the first goal. São Paulo equalized with Luciano through a penalty kick, but it's once again Paulinho getting that late winner. A match that maybe they didn't need to win, looking at how Palmeiras has been playing recently, but still, it's very nice to end the season at home in the way they just did against a tough team like São Paulo.
Of course, of course. Moving on, Flamengo beat Cuiabá. Nothing too interesting there in terms of scoreline and when you look at the teams on the page. But Flamengo, of course, still chasing down that second and third spot. Only reason I pause on this one is Daverson being a goon as usual, like I just alluded to. He was subbed off, and of course, at the Maracanã, he's hated. And he was thanking the fans, applauding them, and made sure to point to his Libertadores trophy tattoo that he have won, of course, at the expense of Flamengo. So pretty humorous there. Anything on that match before we move on to some of the bigger ones?
Yeah, talking about Daverson, he's just a funny character, like someone you would love to see in the pitch and off the pitch as well. And yeah, you might understand why even Luis Estevao wants to get him in Brasiliense. So it's actually funny what he did there. I saw the clip, and for a moment, I thought he's genuinely thanking his former supporters because back in 2020, I didn't really follow other matches than Santos in Brasileirão, and I thought Daverson played for Flamengo, and I thought he's thanking them. And for a second, I think back, I'm like, wait, he scored against them in the Libertadores final. So he's actually making fun of those guys. So yeah, it's a funny story. Flamengo get the win 2-1, but who can forget that 3-1 loss that they had against Cuiabá in match week 18, a match that all the Flamengo fans thought that they had in their hands and they lost. So now they have a chance to get the revenge despite conceding a late penalty by Claesson. So a 2-1 win ending their season in Maracanã. Well done, Flamengo and their new coach, Tite.
Yeah, and the next match here definitely more impactful on two fronts here. Fluminense looking to end their season with a bang before they head off to the Club World Cup, but Palmeiras on the other side getting the win 1-0 here, and they of course this victory put them at the doorstep of the Brasileirão title. It was more or less decided at this point. A red card, which we'll come back to in a little bit, but decisive win for Palmeiras. Any thoughts on this one, Enric, that really put the bow on their championship side?
Yeah, I mean, before this match, we knew that Palmeiras had one goal in mind. And with this win, it would pretty much mean that they can secure the title. The only way they could have lost it after this match if it was if they would lose 7-0 to Cruzeiro, which we'll be talking about soon, and have either Flamengo or Atlético Mineiro win by 7 goals as well, which was very unrealistic. So that win was pretty much their only goal in this game. I thought that it was unprofessional from Fernando Diniz to not put in a fight against league leaders, especially with Flamengo and Atlético Mineiro waiting for some positive feedback below the table. He sort of benched or didn't even call most of their players. The only names that we are familiar with from this starting lineup was Fabio, the goalkeeper, Lima, John Kennedy, and Yoni Gonzalez. And that's it. No Ganso, no Felipe Melo, no Germán Cano, and many more, which didn't even play in this match in the starting 11. So Palmeiras get a goal with Breno Lopes. I believe he had a second one disallowed in that first half, disallowed for offside, or maybe the ball went out of play through the line, which was a very difficult angle to look at from the camera that we were provided. And they also got another disallowed goal in the second half. So 1-0 gets the job done, despite Fluminense playing with 10 men for more than half an hour. Lucas da Silva just then got a red card. And that's pretty much season over for Palmeiras. They get, I believe, their 12th title, which makes them with the most in Brasileirão. And credit to them. I mean, they came out of nowhere. They seem to be focused in Copa Libertadores throughout the whole season. And as soon as they got out after losing to Boca, they were very concentrated on the league and they got the points needed. They got the other teams that were in front of them choking matches, and they win the title just like they did last year.
Yeah, and to be clear, this mathematically, there was still a chance in the last match day, but it just wasn't to be. And it was really only the slimmest of hopes. I think I believe on goal difference, it would have had to be, and Atletico needed, 13 goals, something crazy like that. And for Palmeiras to lose, both of which did not happen. But this victory more or less gave them the title, like you said. I mean, what is there to say? We call them the green machine, and they are a machine, a well-oiled machine that, like you said, hunted down Botafogo and teams on top of them. And we talked about crisis for Palmeiras earlier this season. No signings as well in the summer, which was provoked a lot of hate from fans, but they still come through, of course, granted, with huge favors from Botafogo dropping the way they did. Historic. No one's ever, I think, in the top leagues in the world blown a 13-point lead. So congratulations to Palmeiras, though. You can't take it away from them. They are our hated rival, and one of my least favorite teams, I will have to say, but truly a sensational team. From the coaches to the players and the depth, and they're not even close. Endrick has another year or half a year left in Brazil before he goes to Real Madrid. At least they've got Estevao coming up the ranks, so they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. Once again, huge congratulations to them on a well-deserved title. Elite mentality is what I say about them. But I just mentioned Botafogo. They also drew with Cruzeiro, kind of an uneventful game, and not too much to say from my side, Henrik, on this one, except for that it meant that Cruzeiro was safe. They were saved from relegation, and that they booked their place in Sudamericana. For Botafogo, just another in the long line of dropped points here. Their trailers, Red Bull Bragantino, who had been in second place for a long part of this season, they're actually getting the win here against Coritiba. Leo Ortiz, his first goal in the episode that we'll talk about, is the winner there. So Botafogo and Red Bull Bragantino, 1-2 for so long, but no longer. Despite their best efforts. So, Henrik, any comments on these two games?
Yeah, Botafogo tied 0-0 back in the first round of matches that they played against Cruzeiro. I believe it was 0-0 as well, played in August 6th. And Botafogo failed to score in this match and get the 3 points at home. No wins in Nilton Santos since August 27th, 4 months ago. It's crazy to see the downfall of this team, especially when playing at home, not being able to get the 3 points when needed. And yeah, that's the end of the season for Botafogo. Cruzeiro, I believe they weren't qualified for Sudamericana yet until match week 38. They needed to get a win or a draw against Palmeiras or have Santos just lose or tie, so not get a win against Fortaleza. So they were pretty alive for that, and maybe that's one of the reasons why they put on a fight against Palmeiras. Real Bragantino, they get a goal by with Leo Ortiz and get the 3 points against a team that has been relegated. So credit to them doing what they usually did throughout the season, especially at home. And then we got Gremio beating Vasco da Gama. Goal scored by none other than Luis Suarez. His last match in Porto Alegre ended up scoring and getting the 3 points. And despite all the rumors in the past of fans saying, oh, you shouldn't go to MLS, now I think everybody was happy with how he ended the season. It's pretty fantastic from a player of his capability.
Yeah, and the love that he's had at Gremio has been incredible. It was such a sweet send-off, and what a way to do it as well, with a goal, a sweetly struck ball from the top of the half circle at the top of the box, laid perfectly for him by Nathan. But man, that finish just was incredible. And Larry Jardim, nothing he can do. Perfect finish and the perfect way to cap off his home season. In Porto Alegre. Just world-class player at 36, and we'll talk about him again more later, so I'll save it for then. A few other matches, Fortaleza winning 1-0 over Goiás, Atlético Paranaense winning 3-0 over Santos, and América, surprisingly, beating Bahia. Huge, huge implications for the relegation battle here. America hadn't had a win since September 3rd against Santos, if you can believe it, coming up here at home versus Bahia. And man, they really put a chokehold on Bahia in this one. Bahia had their backs against the wall, and I think it helped them in the end. They had no choice but to win, and with absolutely nothing to lose. So, Henrik, what do you think about these last three matches?
Yeah, I think America put a good fighting spirit against Bahia. I think in Brazil, before two teams play, there's that sort of recognition of where the other team coming in your own stadium is currently located. And I think America was pretty much knowing that they're going to Serie B, they wanted to make sure that they're going to pull Bahia with them as well. So a match full of comebacks. Bahia scores first with Everaldo through a penalty. And just 3 minutes later, Ricardo Silva makes it 1-1. Renato Marques, 10 minutes later in that first half, makes it 2-1. Bahia ties 2-2 in the second, but then it is Renato Marques again getting that third goal, despite playing with 10 men with more than 30 minutes. So great match. America basically gave Santos some hopes with this result. They got the 3 points despite not needing them. It just reminds me of what Abese did in Serie B the last couple of weeks as they got relegated as well to the third division. And then Atletico Paranaense 3-0 against Santos. It was a poor performance by Santos against home side. They had nothing to play for, currently out of Libertadores, despite being celebrating their 100th year, I believe, in club's history. They won't play in the top continental division, and they had nothing to play for. They were pretty much qualified for Sudamericana, and the only thing they probably wanted to do was honor Vitor Roque with his last match in Brasileirão. So they get the clean sheet, 3 goals, two of our former players, of course, Matson, who was at Santos more recently, but even Vitor Bueno, I believe he played from 2015 to 2018. So he's got a couple of years at our club as well. And he both score, both celebrate. And especially Matson, I'm sure people hearing this have seen that clip of him celebrating a goal with Santos with his weird walk. And he did it again against his former club. So it was funny in a way, but something that we didn't enjoy.
Yeah, and I especially didn't enjoy it, not only because of the loss, but also I'm kind of a stickler about you shouldn't celebrate against clubs that have given you a lot. And he was a key piece for some decent Santos sides for a while. And his first season away from the club, he does that. I don't really like that. There aren't any winning. Of course, Vitor Bueno assisting on his goal as well. Like you said, really the story here is Vitor Roque's last game It was at home, of course. They had the patches on the shirts, and he got a great standing ovation. And we wish him nothing but the best. It's unfortunate that he missed so much of the season due to the injury, but that's the way it goes sometimes, and he's going to be great for Barcelona. He was great for the rest of the Real, and we'll have him back anytime. But not too soon, because I really want him to achieve what he's destined for. Last note on this one, very symbolic substitution. Enric, I don't know if you know the player, Dudu, comes on, 17-year-old kid, won the U17 Copa Sudamericana this past year for Brazil. And symbolic substitution there going on for Fernandinho there at the end. Atletico Paranaense fans are really putting a lot of stock in this kid. They think he's going to be a great, great piece for them going forward. So keep your eye on him next season as probably an 18-year-old that might make an impact for Atletico Paranaense. All right, so let's move on to the critical match week 38. We had a few, I believe the term is dead rubbers or something to that effect. Games don't mean a lot, but we had some games where everything was on the line. Remember, Palmeiras, not mathematically eliminated, but more or less with the title in hand. But the real action is at the bottom. Vasco, Bahia, and Santos all in danger of getting relegated. Santos, the least likely, and Bahia the most likely. But let's start with some of the less impactful matches. Goiás beating America in the first match of the match week. Two sides aren't relegated. Nothing really to show for there. But let's dive into Fluminense and Grêmio. This would be Luis Suarez's last game for Grêmio and indeed in Brazil. And wow. That's all I got to say right now. I'll leave it to you, Enric. What a way to end off his career in Brazil.
Yeah, I mean, before this match, I never expected Grêmio to even get a result, a draw in this match, playing away from home, playing in Maracanã. Of course, it's Luis Suarez's last game for Grêmio and in Brazil, in Brasileirão. But what a way to say goodbye. I mean, two goals. He has provided on the pitch for this team, despite not being good in the beginning. We all remember how his season went in the Campeonato Gaúcho. And even in the beginning of the Brasileirão, he was sort of cold, yelling at his teammates, complaining to the referee a lot. And it seems like after match week 19, his career in Brazil and goal scoring opportunities has taken a turn for the best of him and his team. So getting two goals really helped him. Especially the first one, which came right before halftime, tying the match after John Arias had already scored for Fluminense. And then in the second, he scores from a penalty kick as well, makes it 2-1 or 3-1 because Everton had already scored in that first half. So again, great match, five goals, definitely entertaining from two sides that we are expecting much more in the coming future.
Yeah, and they end up getting second place because of this excellent win and ultimately because of Luis Suarez's game-winning goal, the penalty, which is a Panenka, by the way. What a way to cap off his career in Brazil. I mean, just crazy. And also the first goal, it was one-on-one with Fabio after kind of a weird play. I don't know if the ball hit Nino or Luis Suarez, but it was almost like a give and go. And he just slid through one-on-one, froze Fabio and slotted the ball home. Really incredible for someone who we were worried, I think, in the first few match weeks about his knees. You know, he shoots himself full of all sorts of stuff to get these things going, painkillers, all that stuff, to get on the pitch and score. And that's what he does. I mean, you can see even at 36, and I know his body is taking a huge toll, but he keeps getting out there and doing it. And Grêmio fans will be forever thankful for that.
Yeah, definitely. They are thankful. Looking at the last season, Grêmio actually finished second in Serie B below Cruzeiro, and now they do the same in the first division. Look at their performance, 21 wins, 5 draws, 12 losses. I mean, if they had converted some of those losses into wins, they would have been probably champions. Currently, I believe, 2 points away from Palmeiras. I'm sure one game which they lost, if they had won that, they would have probably won the title, but what a game this was. Fluminense on the other side, maybe having their head turned towards the Club World Cup and not being focused in this match, but what a way to end Grêmio or Luis Suarez's career in Grêmio and in Brazil.
Yeah, and one more note before we move on. You know, you mentioned the poor decision and unsportsmanlike decision from Fernando Diniz against Palmeiras, playing the rotated side. And it really did seem like a lot of Flamengo fans were angry that it seemed like he wanted just to give Palmeiras the title so that Flamengo wouldn't have that. And you could have made the argument that he was rotating for the upcoming Club World Cup. But take a look at this match. Fully functioning team here. You've got all the starters, all the big guns. And it's probably even less meaningful for Fluminense. So I'm kind of, a little bit disappointed in Denise, like you are, when you look at these two games. But in the end, Fluminense get the L, which is what they deserve. They end up in seventh place there. So not too bad, but definitely not the living up to our predictions. All right, let's go to the Copa do Brasil final rematch here, played in the last match week. Sao Paulo hosting Flamengo, and Flamengo once again coming up short, as they did in the Copa do Brasil final. 1-0, the win for the Tricolor. Henrik, any thoughts on this one or really on the next match too? Internacional 3, Botafogo 1, two matches here. I think the teams knew kind of where they stood, and you might have a few talking points here, but I don't think these were really that impactful, despite the heavyweight sides that were involved.
Yeah, definitely big teams in terms of their name and their history, but matches that didn't really matter. Of course, Sao Paulo get the 3 points, but they are finishing the season in the 11th spot, so didn't that help them much. And then Flamengo with 66 points, fourth spot, I believe, one spot better than last year. They finished fifth last year, I believe, and they lost to Avaí 2-1 in match week 38. So sort of similar position here, away from home. Luciano gets that only goal, and nobody really wanted to do anything else in that match. And then Internacional Botafogo, back in match week 19, Botafogo won this game 3-1 against Inter. I believe Inter scored the first goal and Botafogo came back in the second half. And in this match, Inter was pretty much focused looking at how Botafogo has been performing the last couple of matches. And despite Janderson tying the game in the 47th, they thought that they can go forward. And only 3 minutes later, it's Alan Patrick who gets the second goal. And then 3 minutes after that, Pedro Henrique gets the third. 3-1 win for Internacional. Botafogo, once league leaders until match week 33, now finishing outside of the Libertadores zone. So they will need to play preliminary qualifications. And imagine if they don't, or if they lose to an Uruguayan or other South American team like how Fortaleza did a couple months ago and don't even make it to the group stage. That's going to be catastrophic. And I hope, despite not winning the league, I hope they can get through and perform in Libertadores after a long time.
Yeah, that would be catastrophic. And maybe Sudamericana is more their style, although they kind of crashed out of that as well when you thought they might go on and win it. Yeah, next season is going to be really interesting for Botafogo. I'm sure lots of changes are coming. I'm sure that, players like Chiquinho aren't going to be as great as they were in the first half of the season. And it'll be interesting to see if they can mount a title challenge that they're capable of. While at the same time now playing Libertadores and really having a lot more pressure. You know, one of the beautiful things about them in the first half of the season was there weren't really any expectations. And once that pile, that pressure and the expectations came and piled on top of Botafogo, they crumbled. Looking at the second half of the table stats here, or second half of the season stats, they sit actually in 17th. So imagine if the season started on the 19th game, they would be relegated. So just a disastrous second half of the season for them, and a historic slide from first to fifth. 13 points. It's going to haunt them for a very long time. But on the flip side, you could say at the start of the season, they would have taken a fifth place finish in a heartbeat. So there are, I guess, some positives, but really this will feel like a devastating loss more than a triumphant finish here for Botafogo. A few other games here to wrap up. Curitiba losing to Corinthians, two kind of pretty bad sides here. Curitiba obviously much worse. They'll be headed down to Serie B, finishing in 19th. Corinthians getting a win and up to 13th place, so not too bad for a team that was once maybe in 18th place. Or even in the relegation zone. I think they started off the season pretty low. And again, we know big moves are coming. They've already said Gilles, Giuliano, and Renato are all surplus to required. Fluminense, I think, are close to signing Renato Augusto. And even I saw this came out today, the doctor, the team doctor that literally the training center is named after was let go. So the president is taking no prisoners here. There's going to be some big changes on and off the field, and Corinthians fans will be hoping for some better results. Cuiabá, surprisingly, getting a pretty big victory over Atlético Paranaense. Again, two teams not too much to play for, but Atlético, another team that I'm going to be really interested to see next year. They lost Vitor Roque, but Bruno Cipelli is a really exciting player. And they're going to have that Vitor Roque cash money. Who can they bring in to replace him and replace those goals? That's going to be a team, I think, that's going to be in some challenging waters, but it's always interesting to see. So, Enric, any comments on those two matches?
Yeah, going back to Curitiba, Corinthians, Fastovera and Angel Romero, once again, he gets on the score sheet, I believe, 4 goals in the last 2 or 3 matches for Corinthians. And Corinthians, with this win, they just finish off their shit season. They didn't have the best performances throughout the year. I believe they lost to Vasco in the match week 2, which was pretty terrific and or terrible. After that, they've been up and down, and they end up in 13th spot with 50 points. Curitiba already relegated. 38 matches, 30 points. They finished the season in the 19th spot. And Cuiabá, very surprising team. We never expected them to perform as good as they have done. And this result pretty much sums up what they have been doing to big sides throughout the year. I mean, they beat Santos here 3-0. They beat Flamengo here 3-0. And now they beat Atlético Paranaense 3-0. And I'm sure they did it against other teams as well. Atletico finishes 8th with 56 points and only 5 points below them. It's 12th ranked Cuiabá. So Cuiabá with an eyebrow raiser result and performance throughout his Brasileirão.
Yeah, 100%. They're an interesting team. And it's actually, I think, their second time that they've qualified for the Sudamericana. So they'll be on the continent this year as well. Let's talk a little about Cruzeiro and Palmeiras. 1-1 is the result, but it really didn't matter. Cruzeiro might have locked in the Sudamericana spot, but Palmeiras, just as a formality, signing off in style with a great Endrique goal, picked the pocket from Lucas Silva and scores, hit the gritty in the celebration for his 11th goal. That's the second most goals, I believe, ever for a under 18 player. Ronaldo is first and Neymar is now third. Endrick moves ahead of Neymar. So record-breaking game for him. And Palmeiras just crossing the T's and dotting the I's. The title was theirs. They knew it, but now it was confirmed after this game. Great celebrations and a lot of signals that Abel Ferreira might have been leaving before. Come out after the game, lots of pictures with the president, Leila Pereira, with the trophy talks. It now is looking like, and I think confirmed by Leila herself today, that Abel is staying. So Palmeiras are going to be crazy good for the foreseeable future. And another trophy in the pocket. We've already praised them and congratulated them here this episode. But yeah, number 12 is pretty incredible. And I think that's the most ever from a Brazilian side. So any comments on that before we just dive into the relegation battle?
Yeah, I mean, some comments. Cruzeiro performed very well despite conceding first to Henrique. They tied the match with Nicão in the 80th minute and finished the season in the 14th spot. I mean, it's pretty good for a team that has been coming from struggles and Serie B in the last couple of years. Palmeiras came here knowing that they're going to lift the title after 90 minutes. So they played with a lot of freedom despite being away from home. And Cruzeiro, with that result, has not only escaped relegation, which they did in match week 37, but needed just to avoid defeat to secure Sudamericana in case Santos would have won their match and they tie, they get the 14th spot. And credit to them, their return to Copa Sudamericana, I believe, after 4 or 5 years since they last participated in Serie A. So credit to them, and I'm happy for this team and for their goalkeeper, Rafael Cabral.
Yeah, and I just really want to, I'm glad you brought that up. Rafael Cabral, one of the best keepers, I think maybe the most underrated keeper in the league right now. Maybe not the best in the ball control or shot stopping, but backstopped his team to one of the most impressive goals against in the league. 32 goals against, I think it's the best in the league, if I'm remembering, or tied for the best with Atlético Mineiro, their arch rivals, and only 35 goals scored. So they add a little bit of goals and keep this rock solid defense, they could be shooting up the table. So really impressive stuff from the D-Core, and of course, Rafael Cabral, Menino da Vila, and Libertadores winner in 2011. All right, Henrik. Let's get to one of the most entertaining parts, and unfortunately this year, heartbreaking parts of the season, the relegation battle. This is all you can hope for, though. It came down to the final day. Three teams are in danger when we started the match week. Bahia, Vasco, and Santos, of course. And let's start with Bahia. They were facing probably the most informed team in Brazil, and one of the most powerful teams, ended up finishing third after this loss. Atlético Mineiro, spearheaded, of course, by Paulinho, by Hulk, all the big boys. And Bahia, no choice but to win. They had their backs against the wall, and I really think in the end that helped them. They had nothing to lose. They were in 17th place. They looked like they were probably going down, and they just went for it.
They definitely did. They had one goal in this mind. They were determined to get the win, and there was no playing around from Rogério Ceni's side. I mean, 3 points or nothing, that's all they could get. There were goals all over the place, first half, second half, didn't matter, and they didn't want to know anything about who Atlético Mineiro are and how they sit in the table and whether they want to finish second or third or fourth. It goes back to last season, if you remember. All those second or third place teams seem to get a lot of losses in the last couple of matches in the Brasileirão. And we even questioned, does anyone even want to end up second? Because I'm sure there's more money compared to finishing fifth or sixth or things like that. So Atlético Mineiro pretty much doing that, losing away against Bahia, despite equalizing with Paulinho in the 36th. I mean, there were goals all over the place in this match. And prior to this game, Atlético Mineiro, it's worth noting that they only had three losses in Serie A since they last met with each other. I believe their first match between them in match week 19 ended up 1-0 in favor of Galos, and now they lose 4-1. I mean, nobody expected this result, and so I think even Bahia fans never expected to get a win here against such a difficult team.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, the Fonte Nova, their stadium was packed and they had faith. Tons of 1% signs. I think they had 1% chance or maybe a little bit more than that of progressing. And one of the worst parts, at least from a Santos supporter, was we saw the early goal go in, of course. And when Paulinho scored, I think everyone breathed a sigh of relief. We thought Atletico would take control of the game. And if you notice this, they had way more added time in the first half than any of the other matches. Everyone else went to halftime. And then the dreaded notification popped up on my phone that they were still playing. And in fact, not only were they still playing, they were still scoring. Luciano Juba, one of your boys from Serie B in sport, popped up with a seventh minute of added time to score right at the end at halftime when the Santos game finished. We were still above the relegation zone, but by the time this game had went to halftime, we were back down, courtesy of that goal. So really great never say die mentality from Bahia. They may not have the players or the money of an elite club, but they definitely have the mentality. And Rogério Ceni probably has a lot to do with that, the manager coming in. Really quickly on Paulinho, 20 league goals. The golden boot is his after that one. It really gave a bit of false hope for Santos fans. The only other thing that I want to say about this match, that third goal that really put the icing on the cake, Thassiano scored from what looked to be an insane offside position, but a horrendous error from the outside back, Arana, one of the Brazil's most talented prospects at one time. I thought was destined for Europe, but ended up at Atletico Mineiro, and just playing Thassiano and like three other Bahia players all onside, pretty hideous mistake there, and really that ended any hopes of Atletico Mineiro being in this game.
Yeah, I mean, Bahia showed spirit. I'm looking at their performance. They end up in 16th spot, but if they had converted 8 of their losses into wins, they would end up this season with 68 points, just below Palmeiras, 2 points away. So maybe in the second spot, and I'm sure that 8 of those matches that they lost, they probably lost 3 or 4 to teams that aren't as difficult as we might think, like let's say America, Cruzeiro, Coritiba. So it's crazy to think that only 8 matches decide the fate of a team in Brazil from even first or second spot to the relegation zone.
That's what makes it the best league in the world. I'm telling you, I'm telling everyone listening, got to watch the Brasil Real. All right. So the other game, Vasco da Gama hosting Red Bull Bragantino. And again here, Vasco probably thinking do or die. They had a little bit of an improved situation over Bahia, but they really needed a win against a big time opponent. And they got it. And this just capped off what can only be described as a great escape. They were down in the trenches earlier this year, if you remember. Their big signing, Pedro Raul, was not showing up. There was even rumors of 777 partners pulling the money from this club. But man, they turned it around. Looking at the second half of the season table here, they're actually in 7th place above teams like Fortaleza, Sao Paulo, Corinthians, Fluminense, Atletico Paranaense, Cruzeiro, Cuiabá, of course. So they really did a great job in the second half of the season. They brought in some great players. Credit to the management team that brought in Ramon Diaz to be the coach. And of course, Pablo Vegetti has been outstanding. And actually both players here that ultimately scored, Paulinho coming on for an injury and scoring 4 minutes later, incredible. And the player Serginho as well, coming on, getting bought in the meantime, kind of an obscure player from an obscure league, I think somewhere in Asia, but coming on and scoring it and giving them the win, the game-winning goal that would save Vasco. They were getting relegated, I believe, at this time. Looking at the timeline here of the day, you know, at 9:30, Bahia is getting relegated. At 9:41, Vasco is getting relegated. At 10 o'clock, Santos is getting relegated, all Brazilian time, of course. 10:06, Bahia is back to it. 10:22, Santos back to it. Vasco back to it at 11:03, and ultimately Serginho would score and guarantee their safety after a red card from Red Bull Braga. But just incredible, incredible second half of the season for Vasco da Gama. All credit to them. Henrik, talk about the game for a second, and then maybe we'll get into the antics after.
Yeah, this match was entertaining. Vasco had one goal in mind, just like Bahia, and that was to win. A win, and they would be secured to get or escape relegation. So Paulinho gets the opener in San Januario, and despite a bad match until that first goal, the equalizer in the 63rd by Leo Ortiz, Vasco with Payet and Vegetti have been totally transformed, this team, in the second half of the season. And the second half of this match also described how their season has been going. They brought on those players and the coaches. I'm sure that has changed a lot of things. But prior to that goal, they didn't really show any spirit. And even that Paulinho goal, which we see on the score sheet, was deflected by a Red Bull Bragantino player. And it's crazy to think. I support Barcelona, and I've seen them, especially in the last 3 or 4 years. And one of the names that I remember is Matheus Fernandes, now playing at Red Bull Bragantino. And I just remember that when the new president of Barcelona came to the club, Joao Laporta, in 2020, one of the players, the first players that he looked at and thought, what's this guy doing in my team and in my club? What is he providing other than getting his paycheck? Was Matheus Fernandes. He looked at this guy and terminated his contract out of nowhere. He just received an email saying that you're not going to be part of this club anymore. Go find something else. And he returned to Palmeiras, had a season there, went to Atletico Paranaense, I believe, last season, and now has been playing a lot, very good for Real Bragantino. So here he deflects that shot from Paulinho, concedes the first goal, which sort of killed our hopes as Santos supporters. So overall, Leandro Rialpi in the 75th, he got sent off, and you just knew that a second goal was going to come for the home side. It was just a matter of when, and it did by Serginho. You were the guy who told me about him when he came to Vasco da Gama, and I wish I knew back then when we were talking about this person that this is going to be the guy that is going to eliminate Santos with his goal that he scored, maybe not in Villa Belmiro, but he scored in another match for a team that also was fighting for relegation. So it was good. I mean, 2-1, credit to him and his team. They survived. So it was a good match.
Yeah, and quickly on Red Bull, Leo Ortiz linked with Flamengo now to replace Rodrigo Caio. 2 goals in 2 matches, so pretty impressive. I don't really think he's got that many in his career, so pretty interesting for a center back to pop up with 2 goals in 2 matches. But it's par for the course here in a league that has Gustavo Gomez, of course, one of the best scorers in the league for Palmeiras. But let's touch a little bit about the antics. We know that Santos was relegated, and we'll get to the match in a second here, but tons of taunting from the Vasco players. Standing on the ball, mocking Santos from Vegetti, and a pretty hardcore one from Rossi, doing the cross middle fingers, standing on the ball, and a pretty harsh caption there. The son of Ramon Diaz, Emiliano Diaz, saying in a press conference, I believe he works for the club as well, that Santos is the worst team in the league. Everyone's happy to see them go. Didn't like the antics that were going on when Santos beat them 4-1, and was really reveling in Marcelo Fernandez going down and said he was a bad manager and said he was going to be where he belongs, which is in Serie B. And then finally, Gary Medel, the scumbag himself, after stirring the pot versus Santos, of course, lots of issues with that game on Instagram Live and talking shit, of course. Especially at Jefferson's Hotel, though, telling him, yeah, go ahead and stand on the ball now, you little, whatever he said, you little, I don't know why I'm censoring myself, you little fuck. So something like that. And yeah, it's just some pretty heated stuff. And it's really got me second guessing my affinity for Vasco. It was there, before all this. And now I'm just, really excited to see them descend into the madness of Serie B next year and, hopefully stay there for a while, especially, if Gary Medel is going to be on the team.
Yeah, I mean, I never had any problem with Vasco either in the past. I viewed them as a fun club, and especially had a respect for them because Felipe Coutinho came from them. So that's one of the reasons why I never had any troubles with Vasco da Gama. But going back to what the owner of Vasco or his son actually said about Santos, maybe he's right because I would be pissed too if my actual coach back in April would be saying after a 1-0 loss in my home stadium that Santos is one of the biggest clubs in history, going back to Barbieri. So he made those comments. Vasco fans weren't happy, and I'm sure their owners aren't happy either. So that's why they decided to hit back. But as you said, they're probably going to be in the second or third divisions in a couple of years from now.
All right, so now let's get to the game in question. Santos hosting Fortaleza. All they had to do was really, I mean, do better or eat as well as the other two teams. We saw the two wins against good teams for Vasco and Bahia. They had the will, they had the fight, they knew that they were going to win, and they went out there and they did that. Santos, on the other hand, a weak mentality at home. They lose with it all on the line. The Fortaleza, in the worst fashion, allowing another scumbag player, Mourinho, who I once called the perfect human, obviously not, who we literally resurrected his career. He scores around about halftime. And celebrates, of course, shushing the crowd and then putting the fingers in his ears. Absolute scumbag move. And I'm sure he's not apologizing for it anytime soon. But just a horrendous result. When our center back is the only one scoring and only one looking like scoring, when we really need the goal, it's not a good look. Jean Lucas had a few opportunities, including one really early on. He totally scuffed it. The nerves got to them. The pressure got to them. I think the mentality was going into the game was all wrong. I think they were looking just not to lose. I think they thought they were through and that one of the other teams would lose. But it's not to be. And it really bit them in the ass here. And it's pathetic. It really is. We've talked about them a lot and we will going forward. But just a historic relegation. And Enric, I'll talk to you, I'll let you talk.
Yeah, you're totally right, Peter. I mean, this match was one of the biggest in club's history. I mean, this is not a Copa do Brasil, a Libertadores, or a Club World Cup final when we played Barcelona in 2011, but it seems like it's been so long since fun times and history of the club. And it seems like all we got now is basically history. That's all we look to as Santos supporters. So we never say, oh, we reached Libertadores back in 2020. Oh, we lost to Palmeiras after an extra time goal. It's all history, and that history was created by two men, Pele in the 60s, 70s, or 80s, and then Neymar most recently. So the team that had so many stars, so many big players, now has turned and fallen off the division. I mean, there were news all over the place making this aware. Even Fabrizio Romano tweeted at 4 a.m. probably in Italy time. So it's just crazy to see the downfall of this club. And going to this match, in the beginning, we started pretty good. We had Marcos Leonardo miss a great chance at the start, as it normally happens. It happened against Bahia. If you remember, we hit the post in minute one. It happened against Flamengo. Despite winning both of these games, we had such a great start, but failing to convert those chances. You mentioned Mourinho. I mean, he said a couple of years ago that he wanted to write history with Santos, and oh boy, did he write it. We conceded a similar goal from a ball giveaway, which caught us off guard. And in the counterattack, Mourinho behind the halfway line, the offside wasn't called and beats João Paulo. And then he celebrates by putting the fingers in his ears and closing his eyes. I mean, I don't know what he was looking for there. I'm sure all those players that sort of celebrate against Santos, including Yuri Alberto, Gabigol 2 years ago, Mourinho, they have to have some trouble or problems with the owners or directors of the club. There's got to be something going on wrong there, because if it wasn't, the team wouldn't be in the situation we are currently. So I'm sure that they have nothing against fans, despite showing that in the stadium. And it's a difficult situation. And we conceded that goal against Mourinho. It happened exactly like that in the match when we lost, when we won 4-1 against Vasco da Gama before halftime. I believe Vegetti got the counter attack after a poor mistake or a passing mistake by Caverson. I'm not sure who made the mistake in this match, but sort of similar things, things that we've been talking about all season, defensive mistakes, failing to go back altogether. There's only probably one player that decides to defend after a quick counter like that. So Santos simply did not come to this match to win. Out of 27 possibilities, they thought that with three, they can get away and maybe they can have Atletico Mineiro or Red Bull Bragantino get the job done for them, when those teams had absolutely no reason to benefit themselves by doing so. So it's just tragic. Messias saved us with his header, and as he did against Botafogo, getting the equalizer late in the 90th. But a second goal was a must, despite Vasco tying 1-1 at that moment. We just failed to push forward. We failed to produce an attack at home, which is even crazier. And we failed to avoid defensive mistakes, which have been going on throughout the whole season. João Paulo, I believe, is the only man that sort of pushes this team. And in my opinion, I love his mentality, his confidence, his reaction from failure. He's a very tense person. You can just see his reaction after he concedes a dumb goal and if one of his defenders is making a mistake. So we don't need little chickens who come to this club and play just for the paycheck, like Mourinho, who turned his back on us and decided to join Flamengo last year, or even players that decide to go partying, like I believe Nathan or Gabriel Inocencio a couple months ago. We need fighters who are willing to play here with all their energy and put their life in the line for this club and want it to succeed. Regarding the coach, Marcelo Fernandes, I love him. I think despite getting those bad results in the last couple of weeks, I think he's done a very amazing job compared to Odario Hellman and Paulo Tura. He's gotten results that we never expected we would, like tying against Corinthians, winning against Flamengo, tying against Botafogo, who were league leaders, despite having their season turned into nothing at the end. So despite I love this coach, I still think that his substitutions at the end weren't just. He put in academy player Wesley Patachi, which, by the way, I have his jersey. I like him as a player, but still, I think he needs time to develop and play with the under 19 or under 20 sides before he proceeds to play on more with the main club. You could just see how he scuffed a shot, I believe, in the added time. Maybe the ball went outside the stadium and we just went straight to Serie B. I mean, unbelievable. We were watching this game, I'm sure, as most of our listeners do through Paramount Plus or Brasileirao Play, and the commentators, Eduardo Bispo and Anthony Wells, both Santos supporters. It was painful. Two people that have probably followed this club more than we have, and it was difficult to even hear their reaction during this match while being commentators of their favorite club and seeing their historic team fall into second division. I mean, it's pretty catastrophic. And looking at Serie B, I think we sort of deserved it to go down because we've been surviving for the past 2 or 3 years by very little. I mean, we almost fell off the state division and now we do so in the real Brasileirao table. We deserve to play in Serie B. For the first time ever since I became a Santos supporter, I think by playing second division, we will have the opportunity to be one of the best teams, surrounding ourselves with other teams like Novo Horizontino, Sport Recife, Guarani, and other Paulista teams. So hopefully things turn up for the best there. But all we have to do is wait and see. And I hope we don't spend more than a year in Serie B. And hopefully when we come back as leaders and come back the way how Grêmio did in the last year and other teams have done in the past by winning the Brasileirao 1 year or 2 after getting promoted.
Yeah, and let's not, I don't want to belabor this too much. We've got a few other things to talk about here, so stay with us if you're thinking about hitting that pause or closing your app. But yeah, I reiterate everything you said, especially some of Marcelo Fernandez. I like that he made some changes early on when he saw things weren't going the right way. But also, I did not like some of his later changes, bringing off Jean Lucas and bringing off Julio Furch as well. One of the most decisive players that we've had over the last little stretch of games. He's literally won us, what is it, 9 points on the back of him on his own. So didn't really love that. Wesley Patachi, like you said, had that chance that went flying. And it just wasn't, it wasn't to be, it wasn't good enough. And it's tragic. It's pathetic. It's really tough. And we were talking earlier, it seems like a dream. It seems like surreal almost. And, we're talking about, we're just fans who have never been to Brazil. We're not members of the club. We weren't raised going there. We don't speak the language. We love the team. We follow it, but if we're feeling this way from the United States, thousands of miles away, what are the dyed-in-the-wool fans who for generations have supported this club, going back to 1912, and that have never seen the club fall from the first division? Like you said, news outlets across the world were talking about it, and it's embarrassing, and it's not right. But we have fallen, and we'll get back up. And like you said, I'm hoping that maybe we'll win Serie B and come pop right back up and pull a Grêmio. But we'll have to see what the future holds. Lots of fallout to be had, players leaving contracts, all this stuff, financial jeopardy, financial catastrophe may be on the horizon for Santos because of this. And it's really just very sad. So let's move on because let's not get too depressed ourselves or depress the audience. Because we have the final table. A great season, it must be said, for the neutral. So many great storylines. History was made. We were truly living in history this season, with the fall of Botafogo and Santos being relegated and São Paulo winning for the first time the Copa do Brasil, Fluminense winning for the first time Copa Libertadores. Just great. We had Luis Suárez in the Brasileirão. I mean, it's truly just an incredible season. I'm so happy for and appreciative of everyone who's listened to us this season, even for a second. So the final table counting up, América Mineiro, Coritiba, Goiás and Santos are all relegated. Bahia and Vasco in the dead zone. Cruzeiro, Corinthians, Cuiabá qualified for Sudamericana. São Paulo in 11th qualified for Libertadores through the Copa do Brasil win. Fortaleza, Inter, and Atlético Paranaense also qualified for Copa Sudamericana. Fluminense, Red Bull Bragantino, Botafogo all qualifying for the preliminary stages of the Copa Libertadores. Flu go right in because they won. And the top four, excuse me, go as follows: Flamengo in fourth, Atlético Mineiro in third, Grêmio in second, and Palmeiras for the second year running, the champions of Brazil. You can pat yourself on the back if you're a fan of the Porcos. Incredible team, and very impressive stuff from the whole team, but especially players like Rafael Veiga. Roni to a lesser extent, Endrick, of course, Gustavo Gomes, Weverton, and of course, Abel Ferreira behind the bench. So, congratulations to them. But, Eric, we are not done yet. Let's jump into the evaluation of some of our predictions that we made earlier in the season. We each made a table predicting the results of each team, and then we took the average of them. And I think we only had one team where we kind of disagreed, and we the average came out, and we had to kind of talk it through, which was Fluminense and Palmeiras. We had them flip-flop one and two, and we ultimately talked it out. and decided on Palmeiras as the title holder. So yeah, I'll just kind of give it to you there and ask you, how do we do?
I mean, we've been doing pretty well, Peter. I'll run through a little bit of my predictions and your predictions, just sort of saying the teams that we got exactly right. I got right Bahia as number 16 spot, where they exactly finished Goiás in number 18 and Coritiba in number 19. Peter got right Palmeiras, which I had originally at second, and he got it at first spot, and Sao Paulo sitting in 11th spot. And looking at our average table, we had Palmeiras sitting at first. They actually ended up first. We had Fluminense second. They ended up in seventh. Flamengo, we had them sitting in third spot. They ended up in fourth. Grêmio, we had them fourth. They ended up in second. Corinthians, we thought that they were going to end up in fifth. They ended up in 13th. Atlético Mineiro, we had them sixth. They ended up third. Internacional, we had them seventh. They ended up ninth. Atlético Paranaense, we got it right on the spot, number eight. Sao Paulo, we had them sitting in ninth place. They were ninth in match week 19, but 19 weeks later, they dropped two spots, then ended up in 11th. Botafogo, we had them sitting in 10th. They finished in fifth, so not too far compared to maybe first place. Vasco da Gama, we had them sitting in 11th. They finished in 15th. America, we had them in the 12th, and they finished in 20th. Santos, we had them 13th. They finished four spots below that in 17th. Fortaleza, we had them in the 14th spot. They actually ended up in 10th. Cruzeiro, we had them in 15th spot. They ended up in 14th. Rebel Bragantino in 16th. They ended up in 6th. And Bahia in 17th. We had them, or they ended up in 16th. Coritiba jumped from 18th to 19th. Goiás from 19th to 18th. And then Cuiabá, we thought that they're going to be the worst team on the table. They ended up finishing in 12th. So overall, adding the difference between the actual team where they finished and what we predicted them as, for example, if we predicted Fluminense ended up in first and they ended up in seventh, that's 6 points away. So adding all those points together, my predictions came to 82. So just know that closer to zero is the better. And that's what Peter got. He got 76. And on average, we had 69. So I think we did pretty good for people who, maybe people on Twitter say that we don't know anything about Brazilian football, right, Peter?
Yeah, and I'm also might be one of those people that say we don't know anything about Brazilian football. But yeah, and I really the thrust here is that two heads are better than one. On average, we scored the variances were a lot lower. So that's cool to see. And that was really enjoyable. I love doing that prediction episode, and I can't wait to do it again with you for 2024. But let's close with the statistics from this season. Of course, the goal scorers are always a category that has people really excited. Paulinho coming from behind and riding his team and really, well, powering his team to that really impressive second half of the season that they had in a third place finish. 20 goals from Paulinho, came back to Brazil and hit the ground running. Really impressive season here for Galo, and it's no wonder why they finished so high. Chiquinho and Luis Suarez, both at 17. Chiquinho was way out in front for the long time, but got injured and Botafogo took a nosedive, so no mystery why he's not number one anymore. Hulk with 15, again, Galo, super strong. Pedro with 13, as does Marcus Leonardo. Pedro kind of sneakily up there. I'd kind of forgotten that he was still such a prolific scorer. Daverson with 12, Robson from Coritiba with 12, and Vitor Roque, of course, as well with 12. He probably would have been a lot higher if not for that pretty horrible injury that he sustained and saw him leave for quite a bit. So impressive stuff there. Andriki, 11 goals as well. Great season, second season there for him in the Brasil Leão, and now just his second trophy in as many seasons.
Yeah, and comparing that really quickly to last season, I mean, Paulinho did pretty well, 20 goals, but who can forget Hermann Cano's 2022 with 26 goals, so six more. Pedro Raul ended up with 19 last year. And then we have Marcos Leonardo getting the same amount of goals as in the last season, being 13. Pedro gets two less. So that's pretty much all the summary when it comes to goals in Brasileirão in 2023. In assists, we had Luis Suarez ending up in with 11 assists, just like Hulk. Christian Pavon in the third spot alongside Gerson with eight. In fifth spot, it's John Arias, Rafael Vega, Ganso, and Cauli with seven. And then we had in ninth, Derascaeta, Carlos Eduardo, Guilherme Marques of Goiás, Lucas Evangelista, Mikey, Mauricio of Internacional, and then Tassiano from Bahia. So comparing that to last year, John Arias had 10, now he has seven. Derascaeta had 10, and now he has six, so a little bit less compared to what they performed in 2022.
Yeah, and I think the name really that stands out here is Luis Suarez. I mean, a lot of these players, you look at Hulk, you look at Pavon, Gerson, John Arias, they kind of have a foil on their team where one is the assisting player, and one is the goal scorer. And you can say this about Hulk as well, actually, now that I'm the words are coming out of my mouth. But these two players scoring and assisting. And great seasons for them, and their teams finished accordingly. Luis Suarez ultimately would be elected the best player of the competition. 17 goals and 11 assists for him. 36 years old, just incredible. We've sung his praises enough this episode, but I mean, just a fairy tale vacation here or in Brazil. And it's awesome to see what a big name can still do at that age. So great stuff there from Luis Suarez and Hulk. Lastly, the clean sheets. Red Bull Bragantino's Clayton, 16 clean sheets. Lucas Perry as well. A lot of those must have came in the first half of the season, 16. And then we've already talked about him, Rafael Cabral tying with Weverton from Palmeiras, 16, or excuse me, 15 clean sheets there. Again, you look at some of these teams, Botafogo fifth, Red Bull up there, I think, what was it, sixth, whatever, Palmeiras first. And then you have Cruzeiro, which finished way down the table and were threatened with relegation. Really impressive that Rafael Cabral was able to perform there. And of course, the defense doing a lot of work. Everson on the list, Fabio on the list again at 43 years old is just insane. And Leo Jardim as well, 10 clean sheets for Vasco. One of many really great keepers who had a great season. Although I'd argue that his defense was way better than a lot of his comparables, including João Paulo from Santos. So yeah, Weverton led the league last year with 16. Any comments on that before we shut the episode down?
I mean, you forgot Tadeu, relegation team side with
True.
Goiás, conceded 53 goals this year, and he still had 10 clean sheets. So I don't know where he got that from. I guess credit to him for finishing ninth in the most clean sheets in the Brasileirão. But comparing those clean sheets to last season, Weverton got one less, and Everson also got one less. Comparing that to Fabio, he got two less. So I would say all those keepers have been pretty consistent, despite some new ones popping up like Clayton and Lucas Perry for Red Bull Bragantino and Botafogo.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed this 2023 season of the Brasileirão. We certainly did, although it ended in heartbreak for us. But hopefully there's a Vasco fan on the other end of this hearing this and who's probably laughing like a hyena at us. But so many amazing moments, amazing games, amazing storylines. It's just, again, the perfect encapsulation of why we love Brazilian football, even from 1,000 miles away, like we are. So, thanks everyone who listened this season. We will be back sooner than you might expect with some interview episodes, maybe some more wrap-up episodes where we talk a little bit more in depth about maybe the highlights of the season, and certainly some episodes on the downfall of Santos, which is a momentous event here in the world of the Brasil Real. Again, thank you so much if you've listened to any episode, and especially if you're made it this far to in this episode, really appreciate the support. And yeah, stay tuned because there's going to be a lot more coming from us very, very soon. But other than that, have a great night.